wants to show off their own things on their own phone, their own way. But I think the community is what has brought the manufacturers together to create as close to we've gotten on a right once run anywhere across all these manufacturers' devices, and it's been, I think, fairly successful.
I'll list a couple of pros and cons as well. The JCP, I think the first pro is the fact that it exists at all, and that it's open to, as I mentioned earlier, every single person in this room can join the JCP as an individual member for free. So what are you waiting for? So the fact that it's quite open as an organization, I think, is quite a testament to Sun's faith in its what it's created. In terms of the process itself, the process, I believe, is actually fairly good for taking a completed specification. In other words, if a specification is already done and proven, I believe the JCP process is excellent for picking it up from that point and carrying it forward to actual ratification, et cetera. I think the weaknesses of the JCP have to do around what happens before that stage. And I think if you look at, I keep referring to it, but the work that the JSR 166 group did with concurrency, I think it's an excellent example of how something can be opened up well before it is done, because the one thing you don't want to have happen is that you take something and say, okay, here we are for public review, and then everyone says, oh, we don't like it. But usually what happens, no one says anything until it's actually done and ratified. And so, opening it up further, making more transparency through the process, through the design process itself, I think would actually be a very good thing. Understanding that there are, confidential, there may be areas that have to be confidential or something like that, I can appreciate. But having everyone have access to kind of the current state of every JSR, I think, is something that we should work toward as JCP as an organization, or at least milestones or snapshots or something. Because the sooner you get things out for public scrutiny, the better the feedback will be. And I think that certainly proved true with 166, and we're trying to do the same thing as well with 107 and 236, 237 as well. So making things available earlier, getting beat up earlier instead of later is kind of the key.
I also have some experience in the two groups of bad and good examples. I think the JBI spec committee is really and it's having a good lead in and a good strategy in terms of the lead. They were very open, so sometimes, and they tried to avoid as much as possible the political issues, really getting to the technical level. Discussions were very open and active, and on the strategic side, they also did quite a good positioning on first making sure that they deliver the spec in time and then getting the public feedback after the first hearing. I mean, there was feedback in the middle as well, but they really saw that the overall vision is that first let's finish the spec so that people can start building the first round of products around ESBs and trying to achieve this interoperability, and now the spec discussions are a bit on a pause, let's say, to first get the real world experience with this. And this definitely shows, which is an add-on to what Cameron was saying, that the GCP also can work in an area where there's not already something in place, because in JBI case there was not really something that was well established, except for some patterns and architectural level things. So that's where they took a good approach on first delivering something, now waiting for the feedback before we start on improving it. On the other hand, there's the 207, which is, in my opinion, a little bit of how it not should be done. And basically, that's blocked because of some IPO issues. And this shows a problem which is not necessarily like good and bad inside of the JCP, but more like the problem is actually taking things out of the JCP is also something which is the problem. So it's not necessarily the bad thing inside of the JCP. I think the most or the worst thing that can happen is that people start drifting off and leaving the JCP. That's basically thing I'm quite afraid of, especially since if we look at the other side of the fence, and if you look at Microsoft, they have one stack of products all nicely organized. They have internally in their company all the discussions, let's say, on which product do we put forward. I think that the Java landscape is much more rich than that, and this has, in my opinion, much more benefits. But then we should do the effort of keeping everything centralized and making sure that we do the effort also in the Java landscape to centralize the effort of standardization. So
I'm going to stretch this question out to be perhaps just a little bit thinner than it should be stretched. But so it turns out that if I asked anybody here if you'd been on successful teams or unsuccessful teams, you'd probably be able to give me answers depending on who is on the team. It generally doesn't have so much to do with the technology. It doesn't have so much to do with the process even, although the process should support success. It has a lot to do with who's on the team. And JSRs end up being kind of similar in that there is the JCP supports a process that leads to success, but it is still fairly flexible in respect to how you achieve that success. And so what it comes down to is what the process and the individual group and the individual JSR that you're involved in and how that process ends up working. And there is a little bit of flexibility. In fact, there's a lot of flexibility as to how that can work. So what it comes down to is the dynamic and how things work inside. So I wouldn't actually look at one JSR as being successful, another one being unsuccessful because of necessarily the technology or the reasons or the process, but perhaps how it was driven.
So give sort of a couple of things that I think are sort of strong points and a couple of things that are challenges. Two of the things that I think are success factors in the JCP, the first one is the diversity of the membership, where you have large companies like Sun and IBM and Nokia, but then also small companies, individuals, and other communities participating in JCP like Apache and so on. So there is a diversity of opinion working on the specifications, and I think that is a strong benefit. Related to that is also that the JCP is structured so that the experts in a field can lead that effort. So if you look at the handset area, I think that's a very clear example where companies like Nokia and Vodafone and Motorola and so on clearly have the expertise about what works and what doesn't work and where the industry is going in the mobile phone and sort of other devices area, and they have the ability to express that expertise in leading JSRs moving forward. And I think that helps with standardizing the right technology and the quality of the specs. One of the things that I think is a little bit of a struggle and was in a forum also mentioned by other panelists is JSRs that try to standardize something that turns out to be a little too soon in a day. So my favorite example is Java Real-Time, the first JSR after all. And that took an awfully long time. One of the reasons because it was technology a little bit ahead of its time from a standardization perspective, where it needed a lot of sort of virtual machine architecture and capabilities that weren't there yet, and thus it was really hard to determine what had to be standard and how that was supposed to be written down in a specification. Another thing that I think is a challenge, which is sort of close to sort of my daily life, is the evolution of the JCP. Sometimes you can compare something like the JCP like governing a country. So you want to make certain things easy to change and you want to make other things hard to change. So for example, a constitution, you don't want the constitution to change very often because that disrupts everybody's life. At the same time, you have to have a mechanism to change the constitution if you need to. And I think there with the JCP, to a certain extent, we've struck the right balance. At the same time, once in a while, indeed, I wish that certain things were easier to change more quickly, like, for example, around sort of individual participation and sort of how individual members sign up and such things. But sort of a lot of sort of, to a certain extent, sort of bureaucratic machinery that sits behind it that needs to get into gear and move that along. Kirk?
Yes. Maybe you can explain to us what you're doing to address the bureaucratic barrier to entry to the JCP. So the financial barrier has been eliminated.
I set myself up here, didn't I? Well, let's see. The JCP is based on sort of collaboration. So it's set up in a way where we all need each other. So while sort of Sun provides the chair and the so the program office and so on, Sun needs all the members and you all sort of in the way that you participate for the technology effort to be successful. And I think that also goes for sort of various other members there. That's, I think, the same goes for IBM and others. And so on. So when you look at potential rule change to make, so either with regards to, well, how should software patents be handled in something like the Java community process, you need to make sure that when you discuss that and change that, that you take as many people in the community with you. And so to a certain extent, it is complex just because, well, it is complex. There are many different opinions and business models represented in the JCP. And so if you compare that with sort of the non-Java world at Microsoft, there Microsoft more or less makes those decisions on their own, and well, either you like it or you don't, but they push that forward. Now, you can have the viewpoint, well, that is really easy, and that moves really, really quickly. But I don't think that's necessarily the case, because then indeed you depend on sort of one entity making the right decisions. And so there was a nice quote earlier on the slide from Bruce that sort of a crowd is typically smarter than the individual persons in the crowd. So the challenge with moving the JCP forward is to make sure that everybody that matters can move along with that step. So to a certain extent, I'm not sure that really, so if you can make the bureaucratic stuff really, really go away. Standards organizations do have a lot of paperwork that comes along.
I have a question, Kirk, back to you. Was there anything specific in the bureaucracy that you had in mind to for us to address?
Speak loudly and we'll repeat.
You need a lawyer to get through the initial set of paperwork. I mean, it seems like you can't get through the initial set of paperwork unless it's just somebody. And it's very, the common experience that your first attempt at registering in the JCP is always rejected because of some misstep in the bureaucratic process. It seems like very fragile.
Okay, let me rephrase it. So Kirk said that I think his first sentence actually captures it. You need a lawyer to be able to sign up, which I think is a fair statement. In a way, I think to a certain extent, it is a little bit, from my perspective, sort of on par for standards organization, that the JCP plays a distinctly different role than, for example, an open source community like the Apache Software Foundation or the JBoss community and so on. So what you see with the JCP, so the paperwork that you refer to a large extent, what it tries to do is create a, from a legal perspective, a safe environment for competitors to work together. And sadly, that means that you have to have a lot of sort of legal words to capture that. And with the JCP, that's perhaps a little bit more so than you may see at another standards organization, because we do more than just the specification. We spec leads must also deliver the reference implementation and the test suite. And that means two things. That first of all, in the case of the spec lead, they have real engineers at work on two pieces of real software. And so they need an ability to manage that. But it also means that there is different and to a certain extent sort of more intellectual property that moves about in the Java community process. And so to capture that and to create an environment where you have a table with competitors, so for example Sun, IBM, and HP and Oracle and BA sitting at one table, and actually a useful conversation takes place. Sadly, you need a lot of paperwork. Now, from the individual perspective, if you try to sign up as an individual, I fully understand that can be daunting. And I think certainly for my team, for the program office, I think we can improve the website quite a bit to sort of explain why we need a bunch of this stuff and what the role is of the various instruments that you need to sign up.
I guess it's a question mainly to Cameron. You've suggested, I think, twice that the members of the audience should consider joining the JCP as individual members. And I was wondering, beyond the fact that will give us the right to complain about what happens in the JCP, what will we achieve by participating, and what will the JCP gain by greater community participation?
I think on half the answer I'll have to defer to Ono, but one of the benefits of a community is the ability to not only take advantage of what a community provides, but also to be part of providing it. So in terms of JSRs, each JSR needs a team of people to actively carry it forward, to contribute to it, to comment on it, to potentially write parts of it. So I would hope that over time, you know, people would not view the JCP as being, if you will, an elite organization, because it's, I think, by definition, not. It is truly a process, a Java community process. And so, and this was a misunderstanding of mine as well when I first joined. The JCP is not as much an organization as it is a way of producing agreed-upon specifications. And when I say a way, I'm referring to a process. And in fact, if you read the JCP, the actual process, which is currently version 2.5 or something, 2.6,
just like software.
2.6B1043C and .1 pre-release. So if you read that process, though, it's basically an explanation of, okay, you do this, then you do this, then you publish it to here, then you have this many days to elicit comment, then you do this, then it proceeds to this stage. It's kind of like BPEL for Java specifications. Am I close? It is rather confusing and everything, but it's something that at least they got agreement on. So when you look at the JSRs that are out there, I'm sure there are some that everyone is interested in, and you can also be an observer. We still have observer status, correct? So you don't have to just be involved with actually writing the specification. You can request observer status on a JSR, for example. So kind of keeping it honest status. And I think the more people involved with it, I don't think we should have 1,000 people on each JSR, but I certainly think having more involvement with the process itself, particularly in the early stages of the JSR developments, getting feedback for things that interest you in a particular technology, I believe to be extremely important. Oh, no, I don't know if you have anything you want to add.
I think Kevin is jumping in.
So I was going to say that... one of the things that I find, somewhat problematic in a lot of JSRs at the moment is that they are, you know, written primarily by vendors. Now, that's kind of natural because, you know, number one, the vendors actually have the stress of actually having to, you know, A, implement, and B, you know, market products based on the specs. And so they care more. And number two, they actually have the time to really put into it. But, you know, I think you'll find that on any good spec, actually the voice of individual members is surprisingly, you know, welcomed and you know, listened to. And, you know, I think, you know, from that perspective, I mean, really, you know, the goal of most vendors and of most spec leads is and of most EG members is very much to, you know, build software which, you know, people want to use. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, what people want to use is not what people will actually want to use in practice is not always what they think they want when they, you know, read something on TSS, right? But you know, very much, you know, so it has to go through some kind of filter. But you know, the input of individuals and the community is very much valued. And actually, I think I see how many JSRs currently are led by individuals.
Four or five.
Okay, and I think I know one that's now in another one that's now in the process of being put together. Yeah. So there are actually, you know, there are actually individuals who go out there, and how many of those have actually like gone somewhere?
Well, I think the most famous example is the JSR 166, the concurrencies.
Yes, right? Concurrency was one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Was it the Groovy JSR, James Strachan?
So, you can really do a lot. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be a process that's dominated by vendors. And the other thing I think that, you know, I think especially over the last couple of years has been this kind of, you know, in a certain narrow section in the community, there's been this, you know, year of hate against the JCP and particularly against Java EE, which has been enormously, you know, kind of destructive, and you know, has kind of set, you know, some part of the community against another part of the community, and really, I got to say to those, you know, those people who take that attitude, you know, listen, if you're unhappy with what's coming out of the process, then, you know, either, you know, step up and put in the work instead of, you know, just having negative things to say about the people who are putting in the work, or you know, like, you know, find some more constructive way to give your input without doing the work. Right?
I'd say that there's one other key point, and as a director, I hire a lot of engineers, and one of the things that looks really good on your resume is to be a member of an expert group. It shows a level of technical competency, it shows a willingness to work in a group, and it takes you through a pretty good process. So as an individual, it's not a bad thing to have on your resume.
And so some sort of community things about some individual members. So at the moment, the JCP sort of around 1,100 members. Actually, about 70% of those are individuals. So the individual members actually outnumber us companies. I think you'll see individual participation on the majority of the JSRs, including the really big ones like the Java EE umbrella JSR and the Java SE umbrella JSRs. And I think most spec leads actually really appreciate the individual participation because it gives sort of direct sort of grassroots input on the development of the spec. What you get out of it as an individual developer, I think, is well, first of all, you get to directly influence the direction that specifications take, and you also get to influence who is on the executive committee voting on all these things. And if you think you're qualified, you can actually also run in the yearly elections and get yourself elected like Hani did last year or was it Doug Lee a couple of years back. Alrighty, who's next? Okay, let me see if I can poke the panel a little bit. We haven't rehearsed this, so we'll see how well this all goes. If there is there one particular thing you would like to change about the process, about the role of being a spec lead, for example, to be easier or things working slightly different than they are?
Well, if the PMO would issue a whip with every JSR, that would be very good.
For you to use. Okay.
I would suggest actually that with respect to the organization of a particular JSR, that there be a few more roles than just spec lead, because there's actually quite a lot of overhead in terms of kind of paperwork and just managing the existence of a JSR. I think that's one of the things that surprised me, how many hours I was having to put in every week without making any progress. Mm-hmm. Just kind of answering, because you have incoming questions that come straight to the spec lead. You have there's a lot of organizational overhead. So there may be several distinct roles that, just like an organization might have a president and a chairman and a secretary. Similarly, a JSR could easily have several distinct roles that could have, not necessarily would have, but could have.
So something like program
specified
management.
Hmm?
Something like program management.
Yes, something like that. And it's just a thought.
Okay. I'll echo those comments in the particularly in the areas of having someone sort of take notes and have minutes and that sort of logistical things, because quite often things get discussed in the forums of sometimes it's not always email, and depending on what the forum discussion is, it may be conference calls or whatever. So that was one of the things that we sometimes had challenges with and we tried to solve, but it would kind of keep slipping. But I actually think that one of the biggest changes that needed to be made is actually being made now and being addressed by the JCP and JSRs in particular. And that is that the technology be driven by general practice. So that I think one of the earliest problems that the JCP had and what it was sort of being criticized for was it was becoming an unrealistic process for technologies that nobody was using. And I think what's happened now is that's been reversed to the point where we're now standardizing things that people are doing, the best practices, and those are now becoming part of the process of being standardized through the input of the various vendors and innovators in the business. So we've seen that in the past already, just in some of the JSRs, just in the previous release. But I think we're going to see more of that as well. We're basically starting a kind of a different path from going from an ivory tower specification to a down with the people or down in there with the people to kind of come up and let the grassroots come up and define what it actually is they're doing with these technologies so that we can make that standard across what different vendors implement. In Gavin's obviously trying to do that as well. As many other of the open source people, what previously used to be we would call disruptive technologies, and now I would say those are becoming constructive technologies, where they're actually contributing all of the technology that they have outside of specifications back into the standards. So I hope that this sort of turns around what we've typically seen in the industry as being these kind of two camps, where you're actually able to combine the innovators and the open source people into actually making standards out of those so that everybody can make use of that in a standardized way.
I mean, I want to strongly echo that. I mean, I think, open source, obviously, I deeply love the innovation that happens in the open source community and I love that it can happen there, but at some stage, there's a matter of, just growing up and realizing no one project can, nobody can own a technology that's meant to be, if the technology is to become universal, right? At some stage, it's selfish to try and hang on to and keep hold of something for yourself, for your own little open source project, and that you need to, bring that, into the standards and make it available to, really many more people. The reality is that any standard technology is available to many more users, many more people to use. Getting more back to the topic of the question, what I'd really like to see change, and I think that there's some openness within Sun to that, I'd really like to see, faster release cycles of the platforms that the individual JSRs become released in. One of the things I've got concerns about is the way that a number of technologies, a number of JSRs are bundled together into a platform release and are essentially tied to be released synchronously with a platform release, which in a lot of cases results in things, you know, kind of being tied up, you know, long after the you know, sort of after they're ready, or things being rushed to, you know, rushed to meet a platform release. I think if we had a shorter cycle of platform releases, I really wish that there could be I really wish that Sun would be open to doing, Java EE 5.1, 5.2, things like that. And I wish there was a lot more scope to do, you know, also minor releases of specs, so that you know, once something's out there and done, it's much quicker to realize the missing features, the holes in the spec, and get them patched quickly and get them released into a platform release quickly. I think that, you know, obviously, especially with EE5, there was a lot of work to be done, and so and there'd been a period of a lack of activity in the EE spec, so the EE platform was lagging kind of far behind, sort of you know, like 3 or 4 years behind, you know, the practice in the industry, which was, you know, a great problem. And I don't want, you know, I think we're kind of almost caught up now, and I don't want to see us get back to into that same kind of cycle of falling behind that you know, we got into previously.
So one thing I think that could help to speed up the process is to, as Cameron touched before, is open it up a little bit more. Now the expert groups only have internal communication, and which I can definitely imagine that for some communication this is necessary, but if we have a public side to it and a private side, I think definitely a big part of what is being discussed can be done publicly, and just as we do it in open source, getting feedback early and often is I think a good thing to speed it up and to get the quality even higher on the one hand, and also the second part is on making it easier for, because we solicited a few times individual contributions. If we make things public, more public, it becomes easier to keep track of what are people doing in the expert groups, where they're going, so that you can gradually get involved rather than having to sign up out of the blue and then jumping right into it as a zero versus one trigger. So that's definitely got my support as well. A little bit more open communication.
You mean like public mailing lists for
yeah.
the expert group? Yeah.
Actually, there's a way to do that. We did that in JSR 232. When we formed the group, we specifically made it a core tenant of the group that it was non-confidential. And you can actually do that for a JSR. You can say this is a non-confidential JSR, and then everything that goes on the group, by definition, is public. So the structure's there, but I don't think very many people know about it or use it.
So I might try to do that with 299, actually. I approve of that a lot.
So the consumer part of me would love to have releases as often as possible, because you always want to get it as quickly as it's available. But I have to say that the sort of the industry part of me says that I want these things to be, you know, developed in a very kind of stable fashion. I also want it to be possible to integrate all of these technologies into the whole stack, you know, in between releases, and have a proper kind of soak time along the way, as well as develop time through the various corporations, so that it has wide support. So I have to say that I think about an 18-month release cycle is not too bad, in that it's probably the right balance between having a spec released regularly and quickly, and then having to wait too long for new technologies. But you know, it's certainly a concern on both sides.
All right. One last question, okay. Who has the honor of asking the last question?
Hi, Patrick Linsky. We've talked a bunch here. We've kind of talked around danced around the subject of the Java EE5 umbrella specification quite a bit in this conversation. And I have a question about umbrella specifications, which is, we have these different specs that are kind of subsume a whole bunch of different ones. And within the JCP, as far as I know, there's no real defined structure to say these specifications are dependent on these other ones in a formal way. And there's also no real communication channel among the different specification teams, aside from top-down, what the EE umbrella specification team says, what dictates who should communicate with whom about what.
I think that, you know, in my experience, the big weakness of the JCP has been the fact that the umbrella, that the communication between the umbrella specification leaps happens very late in the stage. And I was wondering what, in particular, for the Java EE spec, but umbrella specifications in general, how can the JCP change to make the encourage the different specification teams to collaborate from the get-go, rather than leaving integration problems to tantamount to the end, at which point somebody must say, thou shalt do it this way across the board.
This is a huge problem.
I definitely have a couple comments on that from the experience we've had. First of all, one of the things we did when we started writing specifications on 107 was basically assign people to research some of the other JSRs that were in any way related, both we could be dependent on or they could be dependent on us.
That's a good idea.
Very time-consuming, and but I think it could actually be formalized. For example, as part of writing up the submission for a JSR, which I've never done, we took over 107 from Oracle. But the part of the submission process is you have to list out all the other JSRs that you're in any way related to, overlapping, competing with, whatever, I mean, however you want to spell it out. I would suggest that, you know, if a JSR is not, you know, completely forthcoming with that information, it should be just rejected, you know, flat out on those grounds. And secondly, as part of setting up the JSR, I would think that you would require at least one member from each. So, for example, maybe the spec lead could be an observer automatically on all the other related JSRs, or have at least one member shared across each of those JSRs. Because right now the way it works is actually hidden channel is the only way I can describe it. I can't divulge information from confidential conversations, but I'll give an example without naming names or numbers or anything else. You know, one of the JSRs knew that it was related in some way to another JSR, and so one of the members from that JSR knew someone else internally working on the other JSR, so we would use those two people as a way to route information from one JSR to another. So it's kind of like if you open your notebook and you want access to a network and someone somewhere is wired in, and so your notebook hops to someone's phone, and that hops to another phone, and that hops to someone's PDA, to another notebook, to a phone, over to that other computer and gets you to the network. It's kind of like this, you know, it would be something like that, except, you know, here it was basically us trying to find some way to get internal information out of another JSR that wasn't published yet that we had to get out of that JSR, so because if we didn't, we would actually end up running afoul of the decisions made in this particular one that you mentioned. So this Java 5 umbrella one. So there, quite often there's no good communication channels among the JSRs.
It seems that the organizers are getting more and more impatient with us, so we run the risk of being arrested here on the stage. Thank you very much for sharing your lunchtime with us, and I'd also like to thank my fellow panelists who sacrificed their lunchtime here on stage. And enjoy the rest of your afternoon.